Okay, hi Ruth. I am here with Ruth Ashby. Absolutely delighted that you could join us this morning for our Research School podcast. And Ruth, as you may know, is the author of Curriculum, Theory, Culture and the Subject Specialisms, which I have on my shelf and have used a lot in my visits to school. And also School Staff Culture, Knowledge Building, Reflection and Action, which is a book which was released in December, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And I read it and I'm absolutely obsessed with it, like I am with your other book. So I just want to start off with why you felt that you wanted to write this book.
Well, I think, like, similar to why I wrote the curriculum one, which was just that I spent a massive amount of time, like, reading and researching and discussing and reflecting and working things out for myself, around, like, staff culture. And I just thought there's got to be a quicker way than this. Like, there's got to be one, well, there isn't, but perhaps I can help by maybe creating something that can start to fill that gap where, other school leaders can come and read perhaps, one thing and be able to, like, gain access to some of that thinking that I'd had access to.
Brilliant. And it is pulled together really concisely for people. And you pack such a lot into a small book, I think. So could I just ask you what you talk there about the fact that you've done a lot of reading, a lot of reflection, and looked at different aspects of research. Just what has been the most influential in terms of focusing your attention on this idea of deliberately building staff culture?
Oh, well, so much really. So I've just written down a few to jog my memory. I think I started off reading sort of, like, quite popular things, so, like, Daniel Coyle, the Culture Code, and things like that. I was massively influenced by Ryan Holiday's work, so things like Ego is the Enemy and The Obstacle is the Path, which I think I came across through reading people like Joe Kirby's blogs and Joe Face's blogs, and those blogs in themselves were massively influential. The sort of early Michaela days, talking about staff culture. Also, the work of Vivian Robinson and the Open to Learning conversations has been just massively influential. But also, sort of, so talking to people and reading people like Matthew Evans, and talking to people like Helen Galdon-O'Shea and Kev Bartle, kind of really, like, you used in your question, I think, the phrase to build staff culture. And that was the phrase that I was using initially when I was sort of asking people their thoughts on this. And Helen, in particular, I think, really switched me on to this idea that, like, culture isn't something that you can build in the way that, like, you might build, like, a brick wall, for example. So you get your bricks and you put them together in the shape, the layout that you want. And as long as you use the right mortar and apply it in the right way, then the wall will have, like, the shape that you intend it to have. Because of sort of complexity and, like, feedback loops and uncertainty and all these sorts of things, like, culture isn't something that you can build in that way, where you set how you want it to be and then the people will do everything you intend them to do and the culture will be exactly how you want it to be. And that was just, like, quite a paradigm shift for me, really, I think. And I don't feel that that's presented in more popular works like Daniel Coyle and people. And so that influenced a lot of the sort of stuff I talk about in the book around kind of, like, having a critical responsive approach and sort of seeking to, like, learn more about internal worlds and that sort of thing. And yeah, like, I guess a key text in that vein was Chris Moll's Complexity, A Theory for Social Science or something. I think I've forgotten exactly what it's called, but yeah, it's a really good book.
Lovely. Thank you very much for that. So you just referenced the internal world there. Can I just ask you a little bit about the internal world and this idea of it's obvious, I suppose, that we all interpret things in a different way. But I just thought it was fascinating in your book. Could you tell us why this internal world is so important to shaping the culture of a school? Why did you get fascinated with that? Because it just it was such an interesting reflective part for me, I felt.
Yeah, I think, like, I always want to know, like, how things work if I'm going to sort of set out to try and make them better. So I guess from reading things like Chris Moll's, he gives an example that I think I, quoted in the book about somebody, like, a leader saying something in a meeting and people walking away with two completely different interpretations of that. And that really resonated for me, I think. I've worked in schools where I have felt really on board and I'll go to a meeting and take what's said in good faith and, kind of walk away with what I think is a perception which is aligned with what the person giving the message might be. But again, you know, it might be, you know, I might be well intentioned, but just like not having the same interpretation as they intended. But also, I've worked in schools where I've really not felt that, and you know, I've been in a meeting and listened to someone saying something, and I've kind of gone away and thought like, oh, you know, and that's like both of those situations are on the face of it kind of the same, but you know, what's different? Like, I'm actually still the same person, but I guess what's different is that I've got different like experiences in my head, different maybe goals in my head, and so like that's the factor that explains that difference in reaction. Like if you were doing it as like a scientific experiment, I guess that's the variable that's changed. And so I feel like we've got to try and close the gap with these internal worlds if we're going to make, like, you want the most accurate understanding of the status quo if you're going to make your decisions. And you know, so for example, I think I gave an example in the book about, you know, we might introduce like a requirement to take the register in the first 5 minutes of every lesson, not just kind of periods one and periods four or whatever. And as leaders, we might see like the internal truancy data, and we might see that that drops loads since we started doing this. And we're like, yeah, this is a really great thing. You know, taking the register in the first 5 minutes is really helping the children. It's helping the school. It's helping safety. But like for class teachers, if they're not privy to that data, or if they don't see it in the same way, if it's not, you know, if they don't kind of interpret it with that level of priority, perhaps, then that experience is really different, isn't it? And to, you know, if I'm a class teacher, it might be like, oh, bloody hell, I just need to get them going. You know, I've got outcomes that I need to worry about for this group, or, you know, it's going to interrupt the behaviour management, and this is a really challenging group. And, you know, both of those perceptions are valid. There's not an objective reality in which internal truancy is more important than outcomes or behavior. All of those perceptions are valid, and we just need to understand them in order to, you know, yeah, I guess in order to inform our decisions, and then also to sort of to try and shape those internal worlds. So like one thing that we might, once we realize there's that gap in or that difference between those two internal worlds in that example I've just given, like we might, you know, choose to share that internal truancy data with colleagues, and we might, you know, do some work around like what actually happens when students are internally truanting. Like maybe they're on their phones in the toilets, getting like, you know, being vulnerable to county lines, or like, it could be horrendous, couldn't it? But you only know that sort of thing potentially, well, you only know what you know, don't you? And we can only kind of help people to know things by, you know, by like sharing that information with them. And I feel like that's loads of what sort of seeking to shape culture is about. It's about, you know, contributing to that shared understanding, and not just in like, and it should be like not just leaders saying, here's some stuff about internal truancy that you don't know and I want you to know, but it also needs to be, what is it about the start of the lessons that teaching staff know and we don't know? What is it about, you know, the pressures of outcomes that teachers are experiencing, and we're perhaps, you know, as leaders experiencing in a different way, but not related to an individual class kind of in the first 5 minutes of the lesson. So yeah, just the more we can build that shared understanding, I think the healthier or the better chances of having a healthy culture we've got.
Brilliant. And elaborate on that a lot in the book by talking about the different perceptions that leaders have versus that which a teacher has, and how we can close that perception gap, and sharing the details and bringing people into that collaborative discussion around why things are happening is crucial. And certainly in my own experiences, I've not quite understood why somebody hasn't got it, why it isn't important enough for them. And it's because I'm not doing a good enough job of sharing my internal world and why it is so important to the education field and the children.
I feel that that's a thing that leaders have, like, you know, a lot is, I'm saying this thing to them. Why I'm saying this thing to this person. Why hasn't this person got it? And just this kind of feeling of like, you know, it can feel quite frustrating, and you can end up sort of almost like having an implicit idea that like, is this person deliberately obstructing what I'm trying to do? And it can almost kind of turn into a bit of an ego sort of thing. Like, I've got this, you know, I understand this situation and this person just doesn't. And none of that is accurate or helpful, and it can, and like, and then your culture can deteriorate, can't it? Because you've got this sort of like, actually it's turned into a conflict, when really, you know, if we can approach it as, so what are the differences between the internal worlds, or between the expectations, between the understandings, or whatever, and how can we work to have greater alignment between what, you know, how we see things and the things we know about? That's just so much more constructive. And I think it helps us as leaders, like, you know, we're under lots of pressure, aren't we, as leaders? But when you start seeing things in that way, you can be a lot more zen, basically, about, you know, when you encounter these challenges, you can, and you can see the way through, rather than just kind of almost perhaps feeling like you're on a brick wall.
Yeah, I totally agree. It really resonated with me, this idea of developing culture within a school being tied to the development of yourself, which you spend a bit of time talking about. I was just wondering whether you'd got a personal example of how you feel that you have been developing yourself alongside developing the school, what you've been learning about yourself alongside.
I just think, like, just everything, basically. And I think the self is a very kind of, like, I guess, like, diverse thing. So, like, one of the themes in the book is just about, like, culture emerges from the sort of the day-to-day life and the systems and structures in the school. And so, you know, if you've got, like, problems in, like, behavior or curriculum or teaching and learning or assessment or whatever it is, then that's likely to create problems with culture, because teachers are either going to be doing things that don't work, or they're going to be under, like, conflicting pressures, or they're going to feel a kind of tension between what's helpful and what they're required to do for someone's kind of SLT folder or whatever. So just learning kind of, you know, as much as I can about curriculum and assessment and behavior and all, you know, leadership and all the kind of just the components of, like, what happens in schools, I would class as kind of a development of self. And then, but, you know, also all the stuff around kind of like ego and open to learning conversations as well, has just been such a valuable, I feel like that's contributed a lot to kind of how I understand culture, and also, like, my ability, hopefully, to be able to, yeah, like, develop culture in more of a positive direction than I perhaps previously might have been able to. For the same reason, I guess, as what we've sort of just discussed, which is that, you know, seeking to understand when something isn't going how you want it to go, seeking to understand rather than just hammering again and again, I want this to happen. I'm the leader and I've asked for this to happen. So if it's not happening, I just need to ask for it more. You know, I feel that's, I'm much, hopefully, you know, much less likely to do that nowadays.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. You wrote about disincentives to developing culture, or to seeing the truth of what the school culture is, and the psychological resistance to the sorts of work needed to build a positive culture. What do you mean by this? Would you just tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, I just think, like, it's hard. Education has had quite, I don't know, like, a checkered past. And we've probably, like, most school leaders, I would say, unless they're, well, probably every school leader has done things in part of their leadership journey that they look back on and think, like, oh, bloody hell, you know, I wouldn't do that way now, or that was a mistake, or that would have, you know, not helped, you know, this person. Like, reflecting on that so that you can do better next time is, like, can be uncomfortable, can't it? Same as with anything in life. And, you know, I think our brains are probably you know, predisposed to not doing that, and just thinking, like, yeah, I'm the leader, I'm gonna carry on leading, you know, spending that time doing it, perhaps having some uncomfortable sort of reflections. And it does take loads of time, and we're all pressed for time, and so that's, like, you know, a significant disincentive. And, like, there isn't, you know, there is a bit in Ofsted about kind of, like, staff well-being and things, but, you know, you could do all the things in this book and you wouldn't, like, have a folder to show Ofsted, or, like, it's all very kind of like, it feeds into things like teaching and learning and curriculum and all those things that Ofsted do want to see, and behavior, you know, which Ofsted want to see as well. But it's not, like, Ofsted don't directly go and look at most of the things, most of the kind of components of staff culture, I guess. So it kind of, I guess, might feel, you know, if you're under pressure from Ofsted, or, you know, if you're expecting an inspection, I should say, and you're feeling that pressure, then, you know, you might feel that you want to spend your time doing other things as a school leader. A lot of the benefits are kind of, you know, they have a bit of a lag, I think. Like, you probably, you know, I would like to think that you will get better student outcomes, you know, through having better staff culture. But that, you know, it takes time for that sort of thing to manifest. And you know, we often sort of want to have something to show for our hard work as teachers. And I think I put in the book as well that it's not very kind of like raggable. Like, it's not like we can, you know, create a spreadsheet, but like, not impossible. Like, you can do, you know, if you sort of staff surveys, and if, you know, last year this many people said that they felt, you know, that, you know, for example, you know, workload was manageable or whatever, and then this year this percentage of staff have answered the same way, you know, that shouldn't be, you know, your defining like metric, but it is something to, it's a valid part of the puzzle, isn't it? And I think that that can be useful, you know, if we're sort of communicating with governors, if we want to kind of demonstrate the value of the work that we're doing. I do think that's something that's worth considering.
Absolutely. And, you know, culture is crucial, isn't it? Drucker said culture eats strategy for breakfast. But just because we can't measure it or it's a slow burn doesn't mean that we have to not give it the attention that we give to some of the quicker moving things, I think.
Lovely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My last question is, one of the things that I love about both of your books is that they're very practical. You know, it's something that you can read and you think, oh, I can absolutely apply that in my setting, or can absolutely consider how that is going to impact on my practice. And you know, in the first book, you know, I have used your questions with subject leaders and senior leaders and actually just taken them off the shelf and been able to have those conversations and been able to have some really rich conversations. This book, I think, will work in the same way. And you, at the end of the book, give us a blueprint for how leaders can use the book to help build knowledge about culture with teams and school population. Why do you think that leaders should get this book? Why should they follow that blueprint?
I guess I feel like if you're a school leader, and I guess if recruitment is absolutely fine, if every time you put out for a post and you recruit somebody who you feel is absolutely brilliant for the role and for your school, then like maybe you don't need the book. Or, you know, if you look at kind of the way that your staff operates, and if you feel that they are all, you know, if everybody kind of has consistency where it matters, for example, and if everybody feels confident to share challenge in a constructive way, and if everybody is confident to experiment in the areas where experimentation, you know, doesn't kind of have a conflict with the need for consistency, etc. So all the sort of the components of staff culture, when I talk about like the way we do things here, if you're looking at all those points and you feel that they are all fantastic in your school, then like maybe you don't need to work on culture. I have never known a school where all of those things are the case, and I am so worried about recruitment in the sector. Like, you know, the sector struggles now. My school doesn't do too badly, actually, at the moment, but I am so worried. I just think that the bottom is going to fall out of recruitment at the moment. When you look at, you know, when I drop my children off to school and I see people, you know, dropping their children off and then going back home to do their jobs as lawyers and accountants and engineers and project managers and all of these other things that you can do as a graduate. And then they come and pick their kids up after school, and then they take them home and then carry on doing their work from home job. That is such a massive competition to teaching that we've never faced before. And I just think it's only going to get worse. So we've just got to make ourselves competitive as a sector for employment. And I think that, you know, when you work in a school with a great staff culture, like that's a palpable buzz. People like that. And you probably... it's hard. It's much harder to recreate that in a job that's working from home. It's often a lot harder to recreate that in like most other sectors, because like, you know, in teaching, it's just amazing because you're working with children and you're working with knowledge. And it's just a really, you know, there are so many wonderful positives. If we can get the culture right in our school, and if we can communicate that to, you know, graduates who are considering what they're going to do for their career, then I think we can save, you know, get out of this hole, which is the potential recruitment crisis. But if we don't, I am absolutely terrified and I don't know what we're going to be doing. I think we're just going to be having like robots teaching our students or AI or whatever. So yeah, so that's the future for me. But you know, having said that, there's lots of like fantastic work that's being done in schools, obviously, you know, without this book. Yeah, I've put it out there just as a contribution to try and hopefully like save some people some time and yeah, hopefully make things better for staff and students. So yeah, I hope people find it useful.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ruth, for talking with me this morning. I really appreciate it. I hope that people listening are inspired by what you've said and want to learn a little bit more. And as you say, I think it is a crucial part of how we move forward as a sector and how we help develop that really positive culture within schools. So thank you so much for your time.
Lovely. Thank you so much.